It's a lonely world that lives to only know itself, and yet, beneath the stars and high above, lonely worlds are waiting, when you'd only spare a thought to greet them. Many years ago, before the age of ego befell society and sent the human race into an eternal loop of obsessive self-gratification, people were curious. Curiosity was an instinct lacking in few that lived to see beyond a day. It was the key that set ideas to motion, opening doors by invention and desire. Indeed, when coupled with just a dash of imagination, curiosity could take the most unlikely of ingredients and turn them into something truly magical. A young man follows the sun as it creeps through the trees of a city park filled with people in May. He does so without a thought. The sun will be his guide, and with her he will enjoy an afternoon's curation beneath the spotlight. No intervention, just submissive appreciation. He strays off far beyond the path, pushing through shade and shrub, each corner a delightful surprise. With a stop, he spies a bloom of rhododendrons, so striking at a glance he could have been stood aside a small pink elephant basking in the glow. Pushing on and further still, his eyes fall to a tiny wooden bench waiting beneath the canopy, just for him. He sits for a while, swinging his feet back and forth, whistling along to the birds. Hours pass freely and without word. The night stirs and the young man offers to walk the sun home. The pair ride upon their shadows, setting minds to flight and enjoying the company. The sun was almost down when the young man said goodnight. Arriving at his house, the young man thought back over the wonderful day he'd had and the time spent with the sun. That night he lay in bed smiling, drifting off into a dream of pink elephants, shadow horses, and vast, limitless forests. He was still smiling when the alarm bell rang. Chapter 1. A Visitor. In a small city shy town stuck in the basin of the Chimney Valley, a lunch bell rings. The bell rings from the busying corridors of Bramble's Country Town School, the one and only school in the market town of Sparksworth. The school had once served as an orphanage, and before that a hospital set for casualties of the Great War. Interestingly, though, the building was initially built by the fringe scientist Humphrey Bramble. It was there Humphrey was to devote the twilight years of his life to the study of all things and everything in between, the title of his last published book, a sort of manic, often delirious monologue few understood and even fewer read. Humphrey spent 20 years alone, shackled to thought and theory. It was widely accepted that he'd lost his mind. Whilst he was certainly a brilliant man, he was equally wild and at times unstable. Humphrey was by most standards a drunk. When he drank, it was like sodium to water, and it was with that very chemistry that he worked without pause until his eventual disappearance shortly before the war. Humphrey had named the building Brambles, and the name was kept throughout each incarnation, respectfully and in part due to the enormous cast-iron sign Humphrey had erected on its roof. The question of how he got it up there in the first place was weighty enough, but bringing it back down again was a job with few volunteers. With all the children now swarming the lunch hall and lining up to fill their trays, Basil slumped into his chair and stared out across the empty classroom. The room was almost silent, just the gentle sound of spring rain falling at the windows, and beneath that the steady drone of afternoon traffic passing through the town. 10 small empty tables, each with 2 chairs tucked beneath and 2 completed test papers left face down on the surface. The tables were set in rows of 2x5 deep, 20 seats in total. Pressing both palms into the desk, Basil pushed himself up and to his feet. Whistling into step, he walked over to the table at the front right of the room beside the window. Peering out at the rain, the wet walk home crept quickly into focus. Basil shrugged it off in a beat before collecting the test paper and moving across the room to collect the others. Thursdays were test day for Basil's class, and the subject was music. Basil had taught music at Bramble's Country Town School for 6 years. A musician at heart, he'd always dreamed of success. Not too much, just enough to afford a simple life. The dream never fully faded, but Basil grew older, life shaped its course, and success never really came. It was his cousin who suggested he try teaching.
"You'll still get to think and talk about music every day, only this way you might actually inspire someone. And besides, you'd be great with the kids."
His cousin was not entirely wrong. Basil was a kind and gentle man, beautifully eccentric, funny, and he wasn't a bad musician. The move to teaching, though not quite the romantic dream of his younger self, was something he embraced with all and everything he had to offer. The kids loved him, as did the other teachers at Bramble's. He was certainly a success there, but he couldn't help feeling there was always just something missing, something scratching beneath the surface, something he'd left behind. This feeling was visible to those who truly knew him, and none more than his wife Flora. Flora was Basil's favourite thing in the whole world, beautiful and smart. She was a success at just about anything she turned her mind to. She'd built a career as a seamstress, started and sold a hugely successful clothing company making costume for theatre and film. She'd risen to global acclaim as a dancer and could champion any card game on the table. Yet it wasn't all this that had Basil weak at the knees and falling through fancy. It was that despite those things, no matter what came to play, whatever the weather, Flora was cool, calm, and effortlessly stylish. This, in fact, was something so far from Basil's own behavioural blueprint that at first it caught him shy, bumbling through dates and conversations, red-faced and giddy like a sugared toddler trying to explain algebra. Though he didn't know it at the time, he would later learn that it was that vulnerability that Flora fell for in an instant. "My darling man could charm honey from the bees," she would say to her friends proudly. "When we first met, our eyes locked, and within a second he turned pink as a rose." To Flora, Basil was simply heaven. She adored listening to her husband talk about his love of music, how he'd throw his hands around in passionate cries over this artist or that. She loved to lie in bed and listen as he played piano in the far room late into the night, and she loved how in more recent years he'd taken to the thought that having a bowl of cereal beyond 11 p.m. was in some way rebellious. The couple had met at a birthday picnic for a mutual friend in June, 12 years prior to this very moment. They'd been inseparable ever since. The day ended, as all days do. With the test packed safely in a plastic binder, Basil fetched his hat, coat, and umbrella from the stand, stepped out into the corridor, and shut the classroom door behind him. Further down the corridor, Basil could hear footsteps approaching. Two voices. One clearly the unmistakable voice of
Roger Rufus Walsinger,
the school's ever so slightly curious headmaster. The other Basil did not recognize. He locked the door and pulled out his phone to message Flora. "Just about to leave now, darling. Should I grab anything on my way?"
"Ah, let me introduce you to Sparksware's very own Jeff Lynn. This is Basil, our music teacher. He keeps us current."
Shuffling his feet awkwardly, Basil extended a hand to the stranger. "Lovely to meet you, Mr.
Alberto. Alberto Tolov."
"Ah, well, lovely to meet Mr. Tolov."
"Mr. Tolov knew Humphrey Bramble, Basil. They were the friends."
Roger turned to Mr. Tolov. Alberto Tolov stared up at Basil, unflinching, pale and emotionless. He was clearly very old, yet his age was somehow ambiguous. He stood a modest 5'5", dressed entirely in black, one hand clutching a cane, a wide-brimmed Stetson shadowing the years from his brow.
"Yes, we were friends and colleagues a long time ago now."
"Ah, okay, but Humphrey Bramble disappeared years ago, no? Before the war?"
"Very sad. I never received the word from him. It is really only by chance that I stand before you now."
"Oh?
My work, it takes me to a lot of places, and more recently the city. The National Museum of Health Sciences has a research lab. It was in that lab that Humphrey first spoke to me of his plans for what is now a school. I met with an old acquaintance there who was able to fill in a few blanks, and I had to come and see it for myself. We were close.
Okay, well, lovely to meet you. I must be off.
Roger?
Yes, yes, thanks, Basil. See you Friday.
Basil marched away down the corridor, bearing right, eventually swinging off down a much smaller hallway and out through the fire escape. The fire escape door clicked shut behind him. Basil unfurled his umbrella, checked his phone, and stepped over the large hatch door to the basement. Prone to ritual, the vision of one day falling through the hatch had this built into an effortless routine. The rain crescendoed into pour. Basil hunched forward, marching across the car park over to the lane on the other side. The walk home was exactly 1 mile. 1 mile spread between two hedge-lined country roads with fields and small woodlands either side. It was a quick walk, but today it was to be a very, very wet walk. Whispered, "Smile, you're almost done." Basil was one block away and striding through the plume. Arriving at the front door, he closed his umbrella, slid it beneath his arm, and knocked twice. One, two, three, four muffled bangs, and some steps later, the door swung open.
"My darling, good gracious, look at you. You're soaking. Look, look, look at your shoes. Come on now, darling, get inside. Dinner's ready."
Flora ushered Basil in through the door, reaching for his wet hat as he passed by. A narrow hall led straight through to the kitchen, past a set of stairs, and beyond that, the living room. The couple had travelled pretty extensively over the years, and the combined inspiration could be seen tastefully communicated in the decor. Large Tibetan cabinets with landscape mural doors flushed to the wall and stacked with pottery. Roadside artists from Budapest to Havana displayed in frame, punctuated in Polaroid memory, and plants, candles, lanterns, Indian cushions with olive green velvet sofas, a whole lot of strange and wonderful instruments, distressed floorboards, Persian rugs, a log fire full of dry kindling, and a cat. Frank the Cat. Frank the Cat was named after the late great Frank Sinatra. He was grey from head to toe and deeply troubled. Also, the couple thought. You see, ever since he was a kitten, Frank had taken to just pushing things onto the floor. Cups, glasses, plates, or magazines, he did it with pretty much anything and seemingly without reason. Basil and Flora had tried everything to convey the irritation to Frank, hoping that he may grow out of it someday. Eventually, with all patience spent, the couple gave up. They took to sighing as Frank walked into a room this day or that, a sort of preemptive release to quash any outburst towards their feline housemate. Late at night, while the couple slept, Frank would often sit outside in the garden. With his eyes to the moon, he would plea,
"O universe, power beyond my sight, some cruel spirit haunts my paw. I have no common tongue with which to impart this miserable affliction upon my family, and to them I am only rust. Please offer these people my story, so they may find their peace in me, as I have found in them."
Poor old Frank the Cat. He had a twitch and no way to excuse or convey the involuntary nature of these incidents. In his heart he knew the couple loved him dearly, regardless, but he couldn't bear being misunderstood, nor the obvious upset that it caused. Frank was sensitive like that.
Wow.
Flora set the silver, Basil poured the wine, and the couple sat to eat by candlelight. "I met this strange old man today." Roger was showing him around the school. Apparently he knew Humphrey Bramble. "The scientist?" "Yeah, he was kind of creepy and there was definitely something not quite right." "How so?" "It's tough to name it specifically, just something reserved and secretive. Something not entirely honest."
"Did you ask Roger about him?"
"I didn't have a chance, and anyway, you know Roger. He wouldn't know a pirate from a prince. He was busy showboating, reading off his famous Bramble's history lecture. I expect there must be money involved somewhere along the line." The pair chuckled softly into silence.
"So, I have some news."
Flora smiled, blushing as her eyes fixed on her husband.
"You remember that project with my friend Lucy, bringing art to hospitals and care homes?"
"Yes, of course."
"Well, we got the grant. It's not a huge amount of money, but it's enough to get us started, and in time, who knows?" Basil sat back in his chair as a huge smile stretched wide across his face. My darling wife, I am so very proud of you. That is wonderful news. A toast. To my dearest wife, you are an inspiration and the most magical of creatures. I love you, my darling. Congratulations. Elsewhere, Roger has been entertaining Alberta from his office back at the school for some time. Five teas down, the caffeine has him fully wired and racing through monologue after monologue. Stories of sports day extravaganzas, county competition winners, and a rather impressive article in the local rag, The Sparksworth Slice, showcasing Brambles as the go-to school if you want to become a steam train driver. Yes, indeed, Brambles have produced an impressive 200 steam train drivers since its first year as a school. This was of particular importance to Roger, who, in spite of being turned away from the rails after initially failing his test, simply loved the trains.
I simply love the trains. There's just something so very beautiful about those engines, you know, from Blenkinsop to Gresley. It's a bloody symphony of steam is what it is. A bloody symphony of steam. And, hey, well, I'll tell you what, if you're interested, perhaps I could take you for a little toot while you're in these parts. What do you say?
Alberto said nothing, just stared back blankly at Roger and narrowed his eyes. This curious imbalance was of no concern to Roger, who continued,
Yes, I think that would be just fine. I haven't been on a tourist toot in 3 summers. I dare say I...
He was halfway through his thought when the lights
went out.
Good morning.
Good morning, darling. Did you sleep well? Like a bear, my love. You certainly sounded like a bear with all your night grumbles. I wondered for a moment if some rogue Winnie had done away with you and slipped in for the spoon. Oh, I'm sorry, was it awful? No, darling. I was awake already. All the excitement of this grant and the project finally falling into place kept my mind terribly busy, that's all. Right. Coffee. Please. Oh, and would you mind popping some toast in for me too? Of course. Jam? Flora smiled. Basil hopped out of the bed and threw on his dressing gown. Actually, I'll come down too. I'm going to make some juice. Don't worry, I'll do it. Just tell me what fruit you'd like and I'll juice it. Do you remember the last time you tried to make juice? Ah. What was it you said? Just let Frank lick it up? No. Come on, let's go. Flora sat up, slid her feet into her slippers, stepped into a gown, and the couple went downstairs to the kitchen. Basil measured out coffee beans while Flora busied herself at the fridge. Would you throw me the bread, darling? It's up there by the side of the fridge.
Here you are.
Wonderful, thank you. Basil pulled open the bread bag and Flora crept up behind him, wrapping her arms around his belly. Why isn't it staying down? Wait a sec, is it plugged in? It doesn't look like it, my darling. Look, see the plug is hanging out. Frank must have yanked it. Ah, right. Basil pushed the plug back fully flush to the socket and tried the toaster a second time. What the hell? It's still not working. It doesn't look like any power's going to it. Okay, well, I think that's enough. It's clearly broken. You can probably stop doing that now, Basil. Basil, there's a spark. Take your hand off it quickly. I can't, darling. I can't. Look, my hand's stuck. I can't move it at all. Basil, please don't be a fool. Basil! Basil! Flora, where are you? Are you okay?
Yes, I'm here, my love, but I can't see anything. All the power must have cut out or something.
But it's the morning. How in the world could it be this dark? Where are you? Basil stretched his arms out into the black and Flora found a hand, clutching it tight. I'm here, my love. I'm here. The couple held each other for a moment, squinting into the blind dark. Flora trembled ever so slightly and Basil swallowed the urge to surface fear. It's okay, my love. We just need to find a light or a torch or, you know, something. Let's keep close and feel our way around a bit. What was that? What? Something's moving over there. Oh, Basil, it's probably Frank coming for his breakfast. Frank? Frank? I don't think that's Frank, darling, and I don't think we're at home. I don't know where we are, if we're alive or if we are dead, but I'd bet my balls we aren't in our kitchen anymore.
Thank you.